Well, it's that time now for phone calls with our special guest, Russell Targ. But before we do, we'll chat with him about Ingo Swann and some of his work. And that'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Russell Targ. Russell, tell us a little bit about Ingo Swann, you know, his work, Penetration, where he saw some strange structures on the moon. What do you think of that? I mean, I have respect in Ingo.
I'm happy to do that. Can I take a couple of my emails off my screen and I'll get back to penetrations?
Yep, and then we'll go to phone calls.
Okay, people are, I got a letter from somebody who sounds authoritative. Say Robert Gates left the CIA in 1993, so he couldn't have ended your program. That's possible. I was not with the program, but I know for a fact that it was Robert Gates on Nightline who showed up representing the CIA in basically saying, we no longer have any enemies requiring the remote viewing program. So Gates was on Nightline saying goodbye to the program, but this writer says that Deutsch was involved, was ahead, so I don't know one way or the other. But there's no doubt that Robert Gates was the guy who said goodbye. Two people asked me. One is asking me about how to find a husband. The other one wants to know what Silver is going to do, and I encourage both of them to learn to do remote viewing. I don't do that as a service. Two other people want to know how they can learn to do without classes, and my answer to that would be pick up my new book, Do You See What I See? Because I describe in that little book how to do remote viewing, how to get in touch with the part of yourself that's psychic.
Now, by the way, how do you use remote viewing if you want to find a husband?
Let's see. I would quiet my mind and say, I'm going to find a husband or girlfriend or whatever, and what does it look like where I'm going to see that person? What kind of place? Where am I going to... I'd make the assumption I'm going to meet that person. So you can't do analysis psychically. So you've got to ask a question that has an answer. And way I would do it is saying, what does it look like where I will see him? And then I would go to that place and assume that I'm going to recognize him.
All right.
You sort of caught me by surprise, but that's I found my job after, when I left SRI, I found that at least in part by visualizing what does it look like where I'm going to be working. Now, I'm in Silicon Valley, and there are lots and lots of places to work, and I visualized a building up on a hilltop, part of a large complex, and I had never been up to see the Lockheed buildings before. I didn't find them through remote viewing, but when I went up for an interview, I recognized this is my place because I've already seen this place clearly, and that's where I went to work. So remote viewing, the most important thing I can tell you about remote viewing is that it's no harder to describe what you're going to experience in the future than it is to describe something that's hidden from you in the present. So the future is utterly available just as the present is available.
Well, it is a remarkable tool, isn't it?
It certainly is. I'm sure that I rode through the foothills of California on my motorcycle for 35 years without being able to see very damn much, and I am still here to tell you about it.
Okay, Ingo Swann, tell me about your views on what he says he saw on the moon.
Well, Ingo was a great psychic, or probably is a great psychic. One of the things that we did with him early in the program is the CIA said, we know that you're a great remote viewer. We want to know, here we are on Tuesday, we want to know what's going to be happening next Friday at these coordinates. And he was able to describe in detail this pyrotechnic display looked like fireworks, and it turned out to be burning uranium from a Chinese atomic bomb test that failed. So Swann, of course, didn't know that it was a bomb test, but he described this failed atomic bomb test in enough detail so that the CIA people on Tuesday knew that indeed the bomb test they were interested in was going to take place in 3 days and that it would take place and fail. So Swan had absolutely no problem looking in the future and describing something that was going to happen at a later time. So that was one of the, in my experience working with all these prodigious psychics, that's probably one of the most remarkable things that occurred right in front of me. He just spelled it out, and then 3 days later we got confirmation of his direct access to the future. Now, I've read Penetrations and the story of Mr. Axelrod and the aliens on the planet. Ingo claims that that's entirely a true story. Ingo's a fine fellow and my good friend. He also is a science fiction writer. He's written a couple of books of science fiction. And I have no reason particularly to believe that this is a true story. That is, there's nothing in this, since it's writing, there's no, to the best of my knowledge, nothing has popped up that makes me believe that Penetration is a true story. I obviously can't say for a fact that I know that there's no alien bases on the far side of the moon. There's no way to know what's hidden and nobody knows. But as far as I know, in the 20 years since Ingo wrote that, nothing has come to our knowledge that makes me say, oh, yes, now we know that he said that that's all true.
Did you ever corner him and ask him about this?
It's hard to corner Ingo. Ingo doesn't like to be cornered.
No, that I know.
He said, well, that he claims that it's a true story, more or less. He leads his friends and other people to understand that the things happened to him, either in real life or in his imagination. I would say Penetration could have happened, but didn't necessarily happen.
All right, let's go to some calls here, Russell.
Sorry, I can't give you a definitive answer.
That's okay. Would I put you on the spot if we did a quick remote test with you?
You want me to... See, I don't claim to have any particular psychic prowess. I'm willing to grab some interesting object and have somebody describe. What I do for a living is show people how to be psychic. I don't particularly claim to be a great psychic myself.
Okay.
So I would do it the other way. I would say that I have a interesting, unusual object in front of me, and people can tell me what I've got, which is what I do. It would be unrealistic for me to describe what you have there, because that's not particularly what I do, especially not during an interview. So it's guilty, sort of guilty with an explanation.
Okay. All right. I had something in my hand, and I shall put it away. But I may guess what you've got up there. Yes, should I?
Sure.
And then we'll go to...
Let's see. Now the deal is you don't guess what I have. You describe your mental impressions of the shape or the form of what I'm holding.
Sometimes if the impression comes in my head, even before you start talking about it, is that okay?
That's fine.
Well, I see something round.
Go on.
And there's a stand underneath it. And I don't know. To me, it looks like a globe.
Everything you've said so far is correct. Do you have any feeling about the shape of this thing?
Well, you know how we have different kinds of globes. This one, to me, looks like one of those old-world-looking things.
Okay, why don't we let you quit? Ingo always likes you to quit on a win. What I have is I don't have a globe, but what I have is a large magnifying glass in a cylindrical frame attached to a sturdy handle. So what I had in front of me is this rectangular handle standing up on my desk. And on top of that was this circular lens, which looks quite three-dimensional with my desk light over it. You got the picture?
That's weird, because what I've drawn also is a rectangular base with a pole in it for the base of this object you have, and then a circle.
That's it.
Kind of weird.
That's what I've got. So I've got a rectangular base and a circle on top of it. And that. So I'm happy you see this in a way better for you to do it, because people trust you.
Well, and they trust you too. I mean, I'm sure what I've seen you have right there on your desk.
So this is what I think of that I often do, that I think of as the object in the box trick that I was suggesting you do with Ed Danes. So you gave a very good description. Basically, you had a circular thing that looks spherical, but what I have is sort of partially spherical,
mm-hmm.
and it's on top of a rectangular base. And the way I have it standing up, because it's meant to be held in your hand and used as a magnifier, but it's got batteries in it, so it's got a substantial base. And you described it. That's how remote viewing works. We have that ability, and I encourage people to get in touch with that ability, because they can use it to save their lives, to find their car keys, to invest in the market, and find a girlfriend.
Let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on with Russell Targ on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Where are you calling from?
Gray, Tennessee.
Okay, sir. Go ahead.
Actually, I had a question about his book. I would like to find out how to get the book.
Are you on Amazon?
I'm not at the moment, but I can be.
Can you go to Amazon.com?
Sure. Absolutely.
If you buy it from Amazon, you'll save $6 and you can get it in a couple of days.
Okay.
Do you see what I see?
Oh, okay. Well, I would really like to learn more about this. I've actually had some experience with the healing that you were talking about earlier. I've got a friend of mine that's into that type of healing.
I should say a word about the healing. Intuitive diagnosis is even easier to do than remote viewing.
Yeah, I've actually done that myself.
I encourage you to do that, and I have a number of stories about diagnosis and healing in my book.
Speaking of books, are there books all around you right now?
Yes.
Man, I'm good, Russell. Now I got to perfect it.
You just cultivate that.
Yeah, I just need more training, I guess. Huh?
See, it's particularly good when you're driving. If you get an intuition that there's an accident up ahead, you just change lanes. It doesn't cost you anything to change lanes, and it could prevent an accident.
Well, that's happened to me, where I prevented one where I stopped going through a green light, okay? Not a red light. I stopped going through a green light because I felt very weird coming up to an intersection, and sure enough, somebody went right through a red light.
Well, good for you. I actually had the one serious motorcycle accident I had was one just like that, where I was hit by someone who went right through a stop sign and hit me.
God. Did you feel it coming, though?
I was distracted. I was thinking about something entirely different. I did, in fact, stop. I saw the pickup truck coming, and my mind was totally occupied with something else, and I drove into the intersection. He hit me.
Bam. Okay. Back to the phones we go. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. My name's
Phil. Sir. Hey, Phil.
I had a few experiences with some psychic abilities, and I was wondering what he had to say about that.
Well, tell us a little bit more.
Okay, well, I just asked, because I've been in contact with seven spirit personalities, and I asked a question, and they tell me the answer. And I was interested in trying to find out more about it, that I can maybe develop my abilities.
Do your spirit personalities, which I would consider part of your higher self, do they give you the right answer?
Yes, they do.
I then cultivate that.
And how would I go about doing that?
Finding some kind of meditative practice, like insight meditation. Find a way to just sit down 15 minutes in the morning, quiet your mind, and get some kind of simple breathing practice, insight meditation, where you just be aware of your breath.
Okay.
And don't expect any outcome. Just quietly enjoy
the time,
watching your breath, and then your friends will come and talk to you.
All right. Yeah, they're always there. I talk to them all day long.
Good for you.
And I could, when I close my eyes, I can vision things. Like if I'm thinking about some ideas and say design something, I can see it in my eyes. It's really interesting.
A way I would think about that is that you're in touch with your higher self rather than somebody outside yourself, or you're in touch with your non-local mind, which means that you're in touch with everything.
How do we know, Russell, to tap into that little voice we hear, whether it's remote viewing or intuition, and act on it, and act on it on the right, in the right way? How do we know to just do it?
Well, I think intuition comprises two quite different things. One part of intuition, in my opinion, is the sum total of everything you've experienced and thought about that's in your subconscious right now that you're not aware of. The other part of intuition is things that are outside of you that can be accessed by your non-local spacious awareness. And you really can't tell the difference between those, unfortunately. But as you experiment, and it doesn't matter also, that is, you can learn to experiment with these things, act on them. I wouldn't start by making investments, but you can make friends with your higher self, make friends with your inner voice, and spend time listening to what it has to say. That is, you get more in contact with your higher self, which manifests to you by a little voice, then you can make that part of your daily life.
And make part of it your daily life would do some incredible things. It
but
could
I don't,
change.
I don't know how to separate your intuition from things that you've been processing. For example, if you go to sleep with a problem of what you should do, and then you wake up and you suddenly know how to solve the problem, I wouldn't know whether that came to you from outside or inside.
True, true. Do you ever use dreams also for your abilities?
Oh, yeah, I have occasional precognitive dreams that are sometimes very sharp, not generally very helpful, but I have my precognitive dreams remind me that our awareness really does move into the future. That I had a humorous they're often humorous. I had a dream that my living room has a high-pitched ceiling. And in my dream, I had a little electric train running around the top of the ordinary part of the wall. So this little electric train running around my living room at about 8 feet up. A pretty silly dream, but it was a perfect precognitive kind of dream, which is unusual, bizarre, very clear, outside of my ordinary life. The next day, front page of the New York Times, an article about the elevated train in Chicago that needs repairs, with pictures of the elevated running a circle around Chicago Loop.
I love it. Stay with us. Russell Targ, our guest. Final phone calls right around the corner. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, a nice little surprise for you for the first hour. We're going to be talking about an automobile engine that operates on H2O. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, producer Tommy will be testing this. And later on, not tomorrow, but later on, will give us some incredible results on how this thing might work. Can you believe this? A car that can operate on water? Man. That's what I call cheap fuel. I'll be back in a moment. Final phone calls with Russell Targ on Coast to Coast AM. Russell, of all the things in your book, Do You See What I See? What did you like the best?
Well, I have an email which sort of answers your question, and then I'll think about your actual question. Somebody says, I'm in college and my girlfriend lives in another town. Is there a way I can psychically contact her? And we had neglected to talk about sex on the astral plane, which is one of the secret benefits of psychic ability. This remote viewing is a kind of antiseptic activity that you and I just did. I've got an object on my desk. Tell me about that. Nobody ever has a bad experience doing that. But you can go from that rather quiet remote viewing to an out-of-body experience where you bring all of your attention, sensitivity, sexuality, and whatever else you're comfortable with, emotionality, to a different place, out of your body, to a place that you're visualizing. You then have the opportunity for a much more involving experience with the person you're visiting, and you have the opportunity for a frightening experience because you then made a serious emotional commitment to this different distant place. Now, you can have a sexual theming, passionate interaction with this distant person. This is best done between consenting adults, otherwise it would be a kind of psychic rape. But people who know one another can have a surprisingly powerful interaction if one of them decides to spring for an out-of-body experience as a outgrowth of simple remote viewing. And there's a big literature about that. McKinley Cantor wrote a book called Don't Touch Me. Ingo Swann has a fabulous book called Psychic Sexuality. And Bob Monroe, who started the out-of-body stuff, described this in Journeys Out of the Body. So it is indeed possible to have a significant and powerful heart-to-heart connection with a distant person. And in the occult literature, of course, much to say about sex on the astral plane. So this is another direction available to courageous psychonauts.
When you're with the government, did they ever try to ask you guys to try to harm or kill an enemy in their sleep or via remote viewing? Is that possible?
No, we did not do that. I can understand the question. The Russians were interested in remote behavior modification. So it's as though we and the Russians divided up psychic abilities. We were entirely involved with inflowing information about distant places, and we didn't discuss or be involved with affecting people. The Russians, on the other hand, for reasons that I don't entirely understand, were not at all involved in remote viewing in the government program, but were only involved in trying to harm rabbits, harm frogs, affect leaders by watching them on television, change people's behavior at a distance, remote strangulation, and so forth. And P.S., I have no idea, I have no evidence that any of that was successful. We know from American experiments that you can affect the galvanic skin response and heart rate of a distant person by focusing on them, by watching them on television. So there's a big literature on remote behavior modification in the American field, in the American work, not connected with remote viewing, but with something called distant mental influence, where you're trying to stimulate or relax a distant person by watching them on television. And that appears to work quite well, but that's not what we were doing.
All right, to the phones now we go again, and we'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast, David, in Hawaii.
Yes, sir. First, I'd like to say thank you, George, for it's people like you and Art Bell who allow all this information to get
thank you.
Out in the airways, you know. I got a question for Russell, though.
Okay.
Yeah, got to do with kinetic energy. I'd like to give him an experience that I had. I'm in recovery. I'm in a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working with a sponsee about 12 years ago and really intent on convincing him about a higher power. So I'm discussing the God idea on the phone with him in my living room. And this three events took place in a matter of like 2 weeks. And I'm talking to him, and as I'm speaking to him, I'm waving my hand around the room, and the TV comes on. And I didn't pay too much attention. I would have turned the TV off, and I kept talking to him. And several days later, he called again, and I'm doing the same thing in the living room, and the TV goes on again. And then about 8 days later, he calls me, and I'm in the kitchen talking to him, and the microwave goes on. My hand is swinging around the room now. And it's funny how we talked about going to the casino, because when I swung my hand around and the microwave came on, I can distinctly remember the number 7-11, 7 minutes, 11 seconds. But I was wondering if he knows why this hasn't happened again. It's been like 12 years.
Well, I certainly don't know why it's happening. As a physicist, the first thing that comes to mind is that things like televisions today and microwaves are very sensitive, that they're run either by infrared or by sensitive. They all have remote controls, so they're quite easy to turn on. So I would say the first thing before I thought about a psychic influence, I would assume that you're physically charged up. That is, you're excited, and you may, in a word, I think it's electrostatic rather than ESP.
I see.
I think there is ESP, and there is some evidence for psychokinetic stuff. But if you told me that the glass jumped off the table, or your shoe levitated, I would say, well, now you got something going. But if you're turning on electronic apparatus when you're actually waving your hand, the physicist in me said that's probably electrostatic.
I see. Well, I thank you for your time, and I will be picking your book up.
I hope you enjoy that.
It is a great book on remote viewing, but it's also a great book about your life. And even though we've talked about some, you know, technical areas tonight, Russell, you've got some pretty fascinating and funny stories in here.
Well, it's the Mr. Magoo in me that always gets me in trouble. I should say that my website is ESPresearch.com, and I will answer emails that people send to me if they want to communicate. For example, I was once visiting with a girlfriend in England, and we were visiting Anne Hathaway's cottage on the River Cam, where Shakespeare lived. And we took out this little canoe and paddled out into the beautiful river, Stratford River. And what could be wrong with that? And I see a sign across the river, and I'm an experienced waterfront person, so I paddle my canoe, and I come to the sign, large hand-painted sign says, "Beware the Weir." Now, this is my second time in England, and I immediately think, is this a werewolf? What the hell's a weir? And I paddle a little closer, and then I can hear water rushing, and I see what a weir is. You know what a weir is, George?
No, I do not, Russell.
A weir is a man-made discontinuity in the height of the river.
Okay.
So it's a wall in the river that allows a level change. So what I was paddling up to is a 20-foot wall where the water would just peacefully go over. Of course, I'd be killed if I paddled my canoe over it.
Yeah.
So I had to paddle like hell to get away from this thing. And then I learned what a weir was. A weir is not a kind of wolf, but it's like a Magoo story. That is, anybody who could see what they're doing could see that there's a discontinuity in the river. But I had to paddle furiously to get away from the weir.
All right, back to the phones.
So beware the weir.
Beware the weir, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, please.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I heard the wish.
Thanks. Go ahead.
This is Jenny in Mobile, Alabama.
Uh-huh.
And for starters, I wish we could get you on during the daylight hours.
Well, now, you know we night people never go out in the sun.
Well, you know, so many people would hear the word, you know, if you were, you know, early during the daytime.
Yeah, no, I know. I've heard that before.
Even if it was reruns. You know, it would be great for more people to hear what has to be said.
Well, that's true. But go ahead, Jen, with your question. For Russ.
Well, I'm really a busy person. I'm a full-time mother, and I have two jobs, and I'm trying to stop one job to begin or continue to begin my own business, and I was trying to figure out, you know, where can I get the money? I am robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I was wondering if there was something he could tell me that would send me in the right direction. I have casinos on one side of me and a lottery on the other side of me. Of course, Alabama don't allow gambling, so...
Well, I don't know if you can get them money, Russell, but maybe you can help steer.
Have you considered going to school?
I have been to school. I'm in my mid-40s. I'm a paper carrier. I took this job mourning my son. I just needed to have a job to be away from people and actually make an income. And now I'm ready to give up this job.
Well, if you want to go to a casino, I recommend you start practicing with something at home before you invest money in the casino. That is, play cards for money with a friend or try and forecast dice or do something to make friends with your ability.
Practice.
Before you go big time, make sure you know what you're doing.
Well, you know what they all say, practice makes perfect, Russell.
You could just practice doing remote viewing. But in fact, I have a whole chapter in my book describing how you get somebody to bring objects to you in a paper bag, and then you describe what they brought you to get in touch with your psychic abilities. This is very easy to do. This is tabletop science. So I guess my recommendation is find a friend to bring you an object, and you start practicing describing the object before you go for prime time. Does that make sense to you?
Yep, it does. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on with Russell Targ. Hi there.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. This is Joe from Manhattan Beach. I had a question about Russell's experience with Uri Geller, but first, on the case of ESP, there's a two-hour version on SideQuest.com. It's the entire version. I just downloaded it. So it is there, Russell, the entire PBS special.
What is SideQuest, please?
I don't know what SideQuest is. It's PSI. Quest.com, and you go under media, and there's four videos there. One of them is the case of ESP. It's been on there for years, but
well, good
entire...
for you. And that's the 90-minute version.
It's 2 hours. I don't know. I fast forward.
I don't
it's
think. 126
minutes, and it says the case of ESP right off the top. You're there with your '70s hairstyle, so it's the special you're talking about. But I don't know. So it is there.
Okay, that's very interesting. Thank you for the information.
You're welcome. George, one thing about Ed Dames, if you can get Ed Dames and Sylvia Brown on at the same time, you might ask them, why are you guys wrong 90% of the time? And Ed, whatever happened to that plant pathogen that was coming in on the Hale-Bopp comet that was supposed to kill 80% of the population?
Well, you know, as you said, Russell, accuracy counts, doesn't it?
Yes.
Next up, let's
go
to our...
Yeah, very entertaining, but I don't know of anything that he's ever done that's correct.
Well, if the kill shot ever becomes correct, that's the one I don't want him to be right about. Wild card line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jennifer from Davis, California.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hi. I just had a question for Mr. Tark. I first learned about remote viewing here on Coast to Coast, and then I started doing it. I also heard from a professor about it, and then I also interviewed a statistician, and she was doing meta-analyses and at Stanford Research Institute, and she found that like just people like me could identify their target 34% of the time, where they should really only be able to do it 25% of the time, and the probability of that occurring by chance was 4.3 × 10⁻¹². So I'm just wondering, I have a two-part question. What does remote viewing imply about the mind? And then why does academia and our culture continue to suppress, like, this ability and other abilities like it?
Well, I can actually answer both of those questions. What remote viewing, what remote viewing says about the mind is that it's non-local. That is to say, it's not limited by space or time. Your awareness is able to fill all of space and all of time, and you're able to get information from the distance, from the future, and that was entirely known 2,000 years ago to both the Hindus and the Buddhists. So that is a very old story, but modern physics has just caught up with it.
And the ability, of course, of remote viewing, why isn't academia pushing it?
Well, academic isn't pushing it because we're still recovering from the so-called Enlightenment, where we got rid of everything occurring. We got rid of the miraculous. In the 1700s, we got rid of the miraculous, and science began to explain things. So we're still responding to the part of psychic stuff that looks like a miracle, since we don't actually know how ESP works. That is, the mechanism works through the fact we live in a non-local space-time. So we've got sort of the vehicle, but how we're able to know the future is going to depend on some. We're not far away. That we don't need any more experiments. What we need is some physicists to investigate how it is that the future affects the past. And I actually have a description of that that I worked out with a Berkeley physicist, Elizabeth Rauscher. On my website, I have a program, a file called The Speed of Thought. So if you go to my website, ESPresearch.com, I've got a file called The Speed of Thought that gives a model for how ESP works.
Russell, we've got 40 seconds left. One last question. How far out into the future did everyone go, do you know?
It's hard to tell. In remote viewing, we have extremely good data that you can look hours, days, and weeks into the future and do that quite accurately. Occasionally, you hear about people describing things years in advance, but the problem is that by the time the years have gone by, everybody's forgotten about it.
Well, that's true.
So Russell, I think that feedback is part of it. So
do you see
hours and weeks is quite reliable.
Thanks
we
again,
did all
Russell.
Of our silver forecasting a week in advance, and that was in that was 100% accurate.
I love you, my man. Thanks, Russell. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.